Good evening, and welcome to Outsources, a weekly KGNU program that provides you with content related to the queer community. I'm your host, Sean Kenny, and tonight we're dedicating our show to highlighting this year's Transforming Gender Conference. Started in 2006 at the University of Colorado at Boulder by members of the Women's Resource Center and the Gender and Sexuality Center, the Transforming Gender Conference focuses on topics of gender identity activism and scholarship, and continues to grow in size and content from year to year. The 2017 conference, which took place this past March, was the largest turnout yet, featuring 2 days of sessions and keynote speakers. We begin our evening with thoughts from Willie Wilkinson, one of the keynote speakers from the conference. Willie is a writer, activist, and consultant, and his recent work, Born on the Edge of Race and Gender, is a journalistic memoir that outlines his personal experiences with identity, oppression, and activism. The book won the Lambda Literary Award for Transgender Nonfiction. I caught up with Willie at his hotel in Boulder as he was preparing for his keynote speech later that evening. We talked about the work that he's engaged in through consulting and activism, and he began by touching on what he's learned recently in doing trainings on public health and LGBTQ identity.
People are still trying to wrap their minds around transgender experience, and I think it's really hard for people to understand the enormous amount of discrimination that trans people experience in every sphere of society. And, you know, even for these wonderful allies that I meet that do have a pretty good understanding of transgender issues, they're really looking for the tools to be more effective in their work. And, you know, I work with folks from, you know, at all knowledge levels, you know, whether it's folks who are trying to wrap their minds around non-binary identity to folks who are, you know, really see how it plays out in their, you know, with their client population that they're serving. You know, the challenges that people encounter, even when providers are on board with this issue, even when folks are understanding about trans issues, just to see the multiple challenges that trans people are experiencing. And in public health, I mean, you know, certainly the mental health issues, the substance use disorder issues, the HIV issues, you know, people are really looking at, well, you know, what's still not working? Why are we failing our trans folks? Why are our trans folks being turned away, not coming back? You know, why are, you know, folks still serial converting and you know, having substance use disorders? Why, you know, why are these things happening and what are we not addressing? And, you know, it's interesting in the public health realm, you know, so much of the focus has been on trans women. And, you know, it's interesting to see that more people are coming to me to talk about transmasculine issues because there's been such an invisibility and erasure of transmasculine experience in so many ways. And so that's interesting to see that, you know, we're seeing more transmasculine folks serial converting you know, overrepresented in substance use disorder treatment programs too. You know, that's a concern, you know, that the invisibility of transmasculine experience, the lack of conversation about transmasculine experiences is impacting people.
And what do you find is maybe a cause or potential root at that issue of invisibility or erasure of transmasculinity and narratives and stories? Is it that it's not fitting into kind of a main story or idea about what it means to be trans? Or what have you found in kind of, you know, experiencing and digging more into that?
Well, I think there's a number of factors at play. I think, you know, there's a fascination with trans women, and there's also this deep-seated hatred and bias against trans women. You know, so, you know, these horrific murders are happening and continue to happen, you know, in the United States and worldwide. And, you know, and yet the celebrities, the people that are visible as trans are trans women. You know, but I also think that, you know, transmasculine folks experience the legacy of female subjugation since the womb. And, you know, people for some reason have this mythology that transmasculine people don't have any issues. Like with one shot of tea, we've forgotten all the trauma that we've experienced as people assigned female at birth. And so I think there's an erasure that has to do with the sexism that we're all experiencing. You know, I mean, you know, homophobia, transphobia is all, you know, rooted in sexism and You know, some toxic masculinity ideas about who, you know, who's dominant and masculine. And I think, you know, that impacts trans masculine folks as well. And, you know, I think people have very little understanding about what trans masculine people go through, and, you know, in female bodies, as kids and as adults. And certainly, you know, we experience male privilege, you know, when we medically transition and or, you know, we, you know, are read as male. Certainly that's the case, but we also continue to experience female subjugation even well into our medical transition. You know, once somebody knows we're trans, then it's, you know, it's a very different experience and of how they treat us. So I think there's a lot of factors at play.
Yeah. And even just going back a little bit to your discussion of doing trainings and workshops. I mean, this is part of work, what you call LGBTQ access, right? That's an acronym that stands for Advancing Cultural Competency and Equality in Services and Systems. So I think this is really calling out how a lot of the barriers that exist for LGBTQ individuals are really ingrained in systems and institutions, you know, far beyond just interpersonal issues. What do you see as those systemic barriers that are really remain as principal obstacles in reaching equality or equity?
Well, sadly, everything's under attack right now, and we had just had recent gains last May in education and healthcare. You know, in May, you know, both, you know, it was recognized officially that Title IX protected people based on gender identity and expression. You know, also the Department of Health and Human Services addressed the four ways that trans folks are systemically discriminated against in health insurance. You know, not being able to get coverage, being, you know, because being trans is a pre-existing condition, not being able to get coverage for gender transition, not being able to get coverage for sex-specific care, and even being denied coverage for something the insurance company can say is related to being trans, you know, hormone use. Oh, we can't address your liver issue because you're on hormones, or even your broken bone because you're on hormones. That affected your bone health. So all these different ways that people are systemically discriminated against in health insurance and, you know, and of course in education, you know, we were seeing these victories, even though we hadn't seen full implementation. We, you know, have, after years of fighting, been able to get the basic, you know, sense of humanity in the healthcare system, you know, because all these biases were, you know, all these, you know, transgender exclusions in healthcare have been really just rooted in bias as us not being fully human. And so, you know, we had these recent victories, and now, of course, it's all under attack. And, you know, some states have protections, but many states do not. And so I think that's going to be, those are really critical areas in which people are going to, you know, experience so much cruelty and lack of access. You know, but of course, it's everywhere. I mean, in employment, housing, so many spheres of society, just public accommodations, walking down the streets or using, you know, the facilities, you know, going to restaurants and stores, you know, people are being discriminated against in every way.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Outsources on KGNU Boulder, Denver. I'm your host, Sean Kenny, and tonight we're highlighting voices from this year's Transforming Gender Conference, which took place this past March in Boulder, Colorado. We just heard a portion of my conversation with Willie Wilkinson, a consultant and writer who talked about his work in the public health sector, as well as some of the obstacles that transgender people, and transgender men in particular, face in navigating institutions and engaging in activism. Now let's move to another keynote speaker from the conference, Elle Hearns. Elle is a partner of the Black Lives Matter movement, and her work with organizations like Get Equal and the Marsha P. Johnson Institute strives to build spaces of community and safety for Black trans women. I connected with Elle on the first night of the conference as she was checking out the event space where she would speak the next day, and you can hear the din of the other attendees passing by us during our conversation. In reflecting on violence against Black trans women, Elle first touched on the institutional barriers to addressing this oppression.
It's at the institution level. Institutions have great power in being able to say who can and who can't, who will accept and who we won't. And so it is the role of institutions that then society follows and mimics. So there's great great visibility around the murders of Black trans women without any conversations around what spaces killed them before someone actually murdered them. And so that is the work that I strive to do and that I strive to enforce other people to do so that equity is actually achieved as opposed to equality.
Yeah, it seems like one barrier is getting people to say the names and to acknowledge the names, but then another step entirely to, as you say, acknowledge those spaces that allowed for that violence. Do you find that people are reticent to go to that next step, to really take a hard look at those institutions?
No, because then people will have to assess their role in the institution and what institutional power they're hoarding in order so that they could sustain. So I don't think that people appreciate the discomfort in their own lives. They're much more invested in it in someone else's, because then people get to show up as a superhero as opposed to someone who also needs saved. And so it is the role of people within institutions that then inflict more harm than they do good. And I don't think that people acknowledge that we as humans have the capacity to do all of the above, do great things and do really horrible things.
Names, and you've mentioned this previously, names often are so important, and they figure really prominently, it seems like, in the work that you do and the messages that you give, the names of people that have lost their lives to violence because of racism, sexism, transphobia. What does it mean to you to bring these names into the conversation?
Well, it means that I get to name white supremacy as being the culprit of their demise. But also, it's fun for me to see who hasn't done that work. Part of my work when I first started out was always acknowledging the names, always informing myself of these lives that lived, so that I wasn't just sprouting off names, but that I had an idea of who these people were, because they were human. They lived a full life, or at least the life that they could have based on the circumstances. And so part of my work now is challenging other people to learn these names and to form their own advocacy around people whose names have been, you know, elevated and not elevated, because there's so many names that we don't know. But also to name white supremacy as the culprit. And I think people shy away from that name. And that's actually the most important one, because that's the one that causes the demise and the one that we should all be working to end.
It seems like there's so much more conversation on a national scale about white supremacy. And yet still, I think there's a sort of shying away from admitting the ways in which white supremacy infiltrates that discussion. Yeah. And even the people that are purporting to be against it, mm-hmm. you know, pointing to very visible figures in the alt-right rather than pointing to how white supremacy shows up on the left, for example, or in the Democratic Party, or, you know, these mm-hmm. establishments that might be seen as on the other side there.
Yeah, and it's really important that people recognize that the enemy is not one side against the other. The enemy is everyone. Like, everyone plays a role in the harm that someone else experiences. In a community that is disenfranchised, there are other communities that play a role in that. And so part of, this piece for me around institutions is really understanding why it's important for radical institutions to form, and radical institutions to then form with an analysis around anti-Blackness, because there's a lot of attempts at radicalism, but there's not a lot of attempts to actually speak or center that there's a particular experience in this country that consistently is erased from being a factor into how everything else matriculates into a societal norm. So, you know, the institutions that infiltrate marginalized communities show themselves every single day. And it's much more than just an alt-right And it's much more than inter-community violence. It's so much more than we allow it to be. And I think that is, for me, where I am in the conversation and also in terms of the actions that I take.
Yeah, it seems like, and I know you were even on CNN, you know, at one point talking about how, in essence, in some form or another, how well-intentioned white folks are standing in the way of the important work that you're doing. And
because the idea is to move forward.
Yeah.
It's to move forward without ever having to assess the conditions of what the root has been. And if you plant a tree, but you don't water it, it's going to die. So it's like, let's build a house, but the infrastructure of the house is going to be funky, but we're still going to build the house because we need to get this house built. Your house is going to collapse. So for me, I think it's consistently important for everyone to continue to acknowledge who's in the way of liberation and who are we in the way of.
We've been listening to an excerpt from my conversation with Elle Hearns, a partner of the Black Lives Matter movement and the executive director of the Marsha P. Johnson Institute. Let's now go to the final presenter that we'll be highlighting from the Transforming Gender Conference, Trudy Jackson. Trudy is an emerging scholar who identifies as a proud Diné transgender woman, and her academic research in particular focuses on public health, Navajo communities, and the impact of colonialism, federal laws, and Christianity. Trudy begins this segment by telling the Navajo story of the creation of the third and fourth genders.
Growing up on the Navajo reservation and identifying as Nutle, that's what we are referred to, was that I always felt comfortable around my grandmother because she knew I was different, and she taught me tools of what a female would do. And looking back on my childhood, I remember helping her shear sheep and carding it and spinning it and dyeing it, as well as watching her make a Navajo rug. And I remember as I got older, I had asked her a question about the oral stories of the separation of the sexes, which I didn't really learn about until I got to the city, but it was interpreted to me in an English version. And I wanted to hear it from my grandmother in the Navajo language, because speaking and hearing a story within your own native language, it has more meaning because there are some words in Navajo that cannot be interpreted into the English language. So how I interpret the separation of the sexes is before colonization, where Navajos had a feud and the two sexes, the male and the female, separated. And the male went on one side of the river and the female stayed on the other side. And this is where the third, the fourth genders come into play. Because, for example, on the male side, the Nutle took on the female role for the men, such as cooking, sewing, and then on the female side, the Thelba took over the male role of hunting, of chopping wood, taking care of the women. And even while these two sexes live apart for quite some time, but eventually they couldn't continue to live separately, so they re-emerge back together. That is a story I was told through an English version that I've read over in some Native scholars' work. And I wish that my grandmother would have shared that story with me in the Navajo language, because her knowledge of growing up in the early 1900s and what she had to endure of federal Indian policies and the influence of Christianity has really changed how tribal communities nowadays struggle to maintain their culture, their tradition, their religious freedom, as well as speaking their language. But as a scholar, I reference the separation of the sexes over in my papers because I highlight the importance of what the Natle and the Dilba served the community before Christianity and federal Indian policies swept the once revered people under the rug.
You've talked about yourself as a proud Diné transgender woman balancing and walking in two worlds. Could you say more about that?
Being a person of color and being trans, I've had my share of stigma, discrimination, but with my education now, I'm able to stand up for myself, because before that, I would be just subject to harassment or put down, or individuals would use words that I wouldn't understand. But now, when I see something, I just call it out. And that has really taught me to balance being American Indian, being trans, living in the Western world. Even though there is a continued ongoing struggle, but I use my knowledge and my voice to stand up for myself when I see injustice.
You're thinking about the work you're engaged in. What kind of future are you hopeful about creating?
Well, one of the goals that I had when I made my second attempt at college was to complete my undergraduate, and that took me 11 years over to accomplish. But in society now, it seems like a bachelor's degree really doesn't get you anywhere. So therefore, I decided to pursue a graduate degree. And I'm proud to say is that I'll be accomplishing that goal in May, where in my cohort at Arizona State, I'm the only American Indian transgendered in the program. So even though I'm going to be obtaining my master's in May, what I decided to do was to continue on and go for my PhD. I do it because the need for my community, because of the lack of voice at the table, that funding that is allocated for the trans community. And I feel that with my education, that I could one day hope to establish an all American Indian, Alaska Native, Native Hawaiian transgender organization where they can share and express their concerns for their community, and that funders will be able to listen from an organization that is trans-led and trans-run. And when I hear of an individual who has succumbed to substance abuse, drug overdose, or being killed, I think about how my vision could have helped that soul. So that is a passion that I look at pursuing upon completion of my PhD program.
You've been listening to Outsources on KGNU Boulder, Denver. You just heard my conversation with Trudy Jackson, and before that, we listened to perspectives from Willie Wilkinson and Al Hearns, who were all featured speakers and presenters in this year's Transforming Gender Conference in Boulder, Colorado. For more information about the trans scholars and activists you heard this evening, including links to more information about their work, go online to our website at news.kgnu.org and click on Outsources under the Shows and Features tab. As always, let us know if you have comments or feedback about tonight's show by emailing outsources@kgnu.org. Join us next week, Monday, at 6:30 p.m. for another episode of Outsources, providing you homegrown queer radio every week. That's Monday, 6:30 p.m. right here on KGNU, or listen anytime after the broadcast at kgnu.org/outsources. I'm Sean Kenny, and you've been listening to Outsources, KGNU, Boulder, Denver.